some of the other characteristics of habits? How does, I don't really have a habit of breathing, but I do it over and over again and regularly. What's the difference between breathing and something that we do out of habit?
You don't have to think about it.
Okay.
It's automatic.
Okay. I think habits are often automatic. But I have to breathe.
Comfortable, too.
Yeah, they're comfortable. One of the things the human likes is predictability, familiarity. And that certainly is provided by many habits. Habits are, at least in the definition I'm going to talk about, not necessary. They are not things that are required for sustaining life. If I don't breathe, I don't live. The intake of food is not an optional thing, although some of the rituals and some of the things we do around food may not be. We mentioned, so habits are things we do over and over again. Sometimes they're automatic. They tend to be very comfortable. And that's the power of habits, is that if we want to change habits, we have to be very aware of the fact that habits have a comfort factor that we need to be very aware of, because it'll trip you up if you don't. But we also have to recognize that habits are not things that are necessary to sustain life. We mentioned liturgy, tradition. What are some of the habits that we may have? Good habits, bad habits, whatever.
Eating styles.
Okay. Eating styles. Okay. That could be, say, being a vegetarian, being a meat eater,
coffee drinker,
regular time for meals.
Okay.
I'm thinking of that.
A meal skipper or a meal eater. Some other things that are habits.
When I retired, I discovered a lot of things I did was habitual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the clock, your schedules. Or
mm-hmm. Schedules. Can you think of some bad habits that we may have that we might want to think
smoking.
About changing? Okay. Smoking.
Overeating.
Okay. Overeating. Any other habits?
Is overeating a habit?
Well, I think it can be a very distinct habit. I think that's the one that I can personally speak to the most. I've got quite a bit of experience in counseling related to smoking. Any other habits? Okay. I think we should talk a little bit about the difference between a habit and an addiction. What's the difference between a habit and an addiction?
It's compulsive.
Okay. An addiction is compulsive. You can say, I want to stop, but somehow it just isn't happening. What else? Most addictions are characterized by a specific withdrawal syndrome. That the person will go through if they are kept from the substance to which they are addicted.
Therefore, it's more physical than a habit.
Okay.
If you have lots of nicotine in your system.
Mm-hmm. I think we can have addictions and problem habits with the same substances. And they may be a matter of degree or a matter of what's going on psychologically. And I think that's one of the things we'll need to talk about. So some habits are good. Our habits that we use to get dressed and get out of the house in the morning. If you had to stop and think in the morning, now, what should I do this morning? Should I eat or shouldn't I eat? Should I shower or shouldn't I shower? You can waste a lot of time. Habits can systematize our lives and give us, narrow our choices in ways that make it easier to just kind of get those things done automatically. Would you want to have to think about how you put on your clothes every morning? I mean, you know, what should I do? Should I put on my shirt first or my pants first? You don't do that. You just go in the closet and it sort of happens, right? Habits can serve us well. Let's get some other habits up here. Can you think of some good habits? Some habits you might like to establish or reinforce?
Meditation.
Okay. All right.
Meditation/reflection.
Okay. Any other habits that you're proud of or that you worked hard to establish or that you'd like to establish?
Exercising.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one. Exercise. So when we talk about changing habits, we may have habits we want to develop as well as habits that we want to extinguish or change. So the features of a habit are that it is repetitive, it is somewhat automatic. A habit that's well established is very comfortable. One thing that means is that changing habits is uncomfortable. There's something that doesn't feel normal during the process of changing a habit. Anyone ever decided they want to drink less coffee? You're trying, okay. Ever gone cold turkey on your coffee?
No.
Okay. Ever known anybody that said, gosh, I didn't get my coffee today and I got this horrible headache?
Yeah.
Okay. I see that a lot in coffee drinkers, and I think it's easy to talk about coffee once we've got it up here, because that's an example of a habit that's relatively easy to change. Compared to many other habits, and yet it's one that clearly has some features that make it. People who will talk about, I can't get going in the morning without my cup of coffee, or people who say, if I don't get my cup of coffee, I'll get a headache. I can't think of the number of people I've had who wake up from surgery with a headache because they couldn't have anything to eat or drink after midnight, and now it's 2:00 in the afternoon and they haven't had their coffee fix. Or someone who has an illness so that they can't eat or drink and they're being fed with intravenous. I had one lady I can remember with cancer that it was terrible. The worst thing about her body changes as she stopped being able to eat was that she went through one hell of a caffeine headache and I couldn't get any caffeine into her because she couldn't take anything by mouth. All my training in hospice that we talked about last week didn't prepare me for how do I get caffeine into a coffee addict who can't take anything by mouth. We finally figured something out, but it was. But there's one that I think is safe to talk about because it's relatively easy to say, okay, if you're going to stop drinking coffee, slow down. Drink instead of 4 cups this morning, drink 2 cups this morning. Tomorrow, use half decaf and half regular. There are little tricks that anybody.
Water it down.
Yeah, you can water it down. Anybody who really wants, who's motivated, can get rid of the coffee habit.
Can I guess what you're leading into? You're leading into stuff that we should give up that's really quite simple and not motivated to more difficult things later.
Well, we can go there if you want to. This
no,
one's,
I'm just curious.
No, this one's kind of free. What I thought I would talk, we could talk about a little bit here, is how do you go about changing habits? We've got something that's regular, that's automatic, that's comfortable. If you want to change a habit, either to create one or extinguish one, what's the number one thing? What do you have to have first?
Desire.
Got it.
Okay. Desire, or in the lingo, that's often called motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We mentioned cigarettes, and that's one that, again, I think is fairly comfortable to talk about. Why might somebody want to quit smoking?
Health reasons.
Okay. Like what?
Lung cancer.
Okay. So with cigarettes, we're going to put these under negatives and positives, because I think that's important. So maybe Joe Blow wants to avoid lung cancer. What might be some other reasons Joe might want to stop smoking cigarettes?
Money-wise.
Okay. I think we could put money in either slot. If Joe says, I would like to use that money for something else, I have a plan, and I want to get that money, that could be a real positive. But if it's, you know, the nag, going, you know, Joe, you know, look at how much more money you'd have if you just didn't smoke those damn cigarettes. Excuse my French, but that's kind of what naggers usually say. What else?
My brother and his wife are chain smokers in the house, really, weeks.
Okay.
I mean, just the same movement.
So, effect on others?
I'm usually very tolerant of this.
Okay. I see a lot of people who find that, that might be a spouse, might be children with health problems. I spend a lot of time talking to parents about the effect of secondhand smoke on their children, especially if their children have lung diseases like asthma. Co-workers.
Relationships.
Yeah. Laws.
Bad breath.
Okay. Okay.
Would this be in the same category as pipe smoking and cigar smoking?
Could be.
Different?
Put mouth cancer down there if you want to.
I enjoy smoking a pipe.
Okay. What are some of the positive reasons someone might want to quit smoking?
Regaining their spouse and children.
Okay.
Save your family.
Okay. Safe family life.
The positives after all the negatives.
Yeah. Maybe better breathing. That's one that will sometimes get someone who's interested in sports, or even just sports. You try to get teenagers to give up smoking, and they think they're invincible, so they don't worry about lung cancer. But if the coach says, you can't be on my team if you smoke, by golly, can't quit like that.
Good example for your children.
Okay.
It could be just a plus to them.
Okay.
I was going to say, too, better communication. You know, I know for people who are smoking, they're saying, please, don't pester me. I mean, you know, don't talk.
Okay.
Don't talk about it.
Okay. We'll put down here, nagging.
Yeah, what do you do with your old family?
Well, I was trying to tell my son once how to quit, and that he, you know, he wants to quit the worst way. But let me do it my way, or nope.
Okay.
Oh, I have a friend who said, oh, I don't want to quit smoking. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
My sister's
no.
Don't want to quit smoking.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a noble about that. Oh. At least they're enjoying it.
Yeah. Okay. And there are many habits that people actually do enjoy.
some habits, and one of the characteristics of bad habits is they tend to be things that we continue to do after the reason why we started doing them is gone. You ever gotten into a habit and said, you know, originally this felt kind of good, and now it doesn't even feel good anymore? The reason I wanted to get some of those things up on the blackboard is to talk about what's the most motivating. Any of you stopped smoking? Okay, two of you. What was the thing that finally got you over the hump that you actually went from saying, oh yeah, I ought to stop smoking, to actually doing it?
Cost.
Okay. So for you, it was this money factor. What about for you?
Well, mine was a little kind of different. It was a number of things. But mainly, now the publicity, the anti-smoking atmosphere that's really prevalent.
Okay.
It, you almost have to be determined in a way to smoke.
You're guilty.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's on your back.
Okay. So the yeah. Institutionalized nagging got to you.
But I was a strange kind of smoker. I quit like 30 years ago, but after a few years, decided, I'll take one once in a while. And
mm-hmm.
When I'd go to a convention back in those days, I'd buy a pack.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, or sometimes when someone you got used to and didn't mind, you might bum. But I would go to conventions and smoke a pack and come home and not smoke. So
mm-hmm.
Not very many have that. I don't know whether it was a kind of a habit.
Mm-hmm.
That I established in that way, and
mm-hmm.
It kept me from becoming hooked on it, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't hard for me to suddenly decide, hey, quit it altogether.
Mm-hmm. So it was something that you felt you had some control over, and you could decide whether you wanted to or not. And certainly that characterizes something that's a habit rather than an addiction, if you do still have the ability to use willpower to change your circumstances. I think all of us have run into people who, at a convention or a meeting that goes on a long time, they're sneaking out the back to get the cigarette on the porch if you can't do one, can't smoke one in the house or in the church or in the office. I think
some parishioners gave. And my son is in his confirmation class, and he smokes. Oh, you know, this is terrible.
I think one of the things that is very very clear is that habits, while they're probably not inherited, are clearly familial. Smoking is, when we talk about a good example for children, the rate of smoking among the children of two parents that smoke is about 80-85%. If one parent smokes, we're talking 50-60%. If neither parent smokes, we're talking more like 10% these days. So there's clearly an example, and the rate of smoking among teenagers runs about 20-25%.
What about codependent families? I think every family is codependent, but
yeah, but well. One of the things you have to realize is that it's very difficult to separate the effect of the other addictions and the smoking, because we were just talking about this on our way back from Heart Lake, that about 95% of people in chemical dependency treatment smoke.
Mm-hmm.
That looking for something to make you feel good from the outside in is seldom confined to one item. You'll find more people who abuse food also abuse cigarettes or abuse alcohol or abuse something else. And that goes for each one of those problems. I think alcohol and cigarettes tend to go together a lot in our society, and even among people who do not have an alcohol problem, you will find that people who have difficulty with staying away from cigarettes will often say the hardest time is either on coffee break at work or when they're out in a social drinking situation. The guy who only has a strong urge to smoke while the bowling team's having a beer during league on Monday nights. So we can often have associations with habits. Between the habit and some other ritual in our lives, such as I always smoke a cigarette at the end of a meal, I always have dessert at the end of a meal, I always have a cup of coffee at the end of a meal, I always smoke a cigarette on coffee break. We often talk with people who are trying to break habits about breaking up the other habits that go with the one they're trying to break. If you want to stop smoking and you usually smoke while you read the newspaper, maybe you don't want to read the newspaper the first couple of weeks you're trying to quit, or read the newspaper on the front porch instead of in your favorite chair. Break up the habits that are associated with that urge. Get up and go for a walk after dinner so you're not sitting at the table with that final cup of coffee and the cigarette. So I think the first thing we need to talk about in...
Is there a personality type that goes with, or like Myers-Briggs talks about your, it doesn't make so much of a personality type, but your maturity with your personality that you do have? Or is that introductory?
I've not done as much with Myers-Briggs as I would like to, so I can't speak to the 8 or 12 or however many personality types Myers-Briggs talks about, but I do tend to see that people who smoke tend to be people who have lower than average self-esteem, people who tend to see their locus of control as being external rather than internal. You see a lot of people who will say, I can't stop smoking, and yet you talk about the parts of smoking that are addictive, and they don't really measure up on the addictive portion, the physical dependency part, but they'll do things like say, well, I can't go out with a friend without smoking. I'm sorry, they force a cigarette into your lips and light it for you.
Yeah.
People who do not see themselves as being able to control their own actions. So we talked a little bit about motivation, and I think there's two things about motivation. One is that it has to be internal or internalized. If I tell a patient, Joe, you've just had a heart attack, you need to stop smoking. While it helps wake him up to the fact that smoking is related to his heart disease, Joe has to internalize, I just got scared by this heart attack. I don't want to have another one. I want to stop smoking to protect my heart. My telling Joe not to smoke may keep him from smoking while I'm standing at the nurse's station writing on his chart, because I can see Joe's bad. But once I leave the room, I'm not a control on Joe smoking. Joe has to internalize that. And that's where things like nagging and because somebody else told you to or it would make my wife happy don't tend to work very long because they only work in the presence of that external control. Joe may not smoke in front of his wife, but he's sneaking cigarettes when she's not home. He's going out on the porch to get away from her because Joe doesn't want to stop smoking. Mary wants Joe to stop smoking. So to effectively change habits, we have to somehow internalize that desire. Now, it may be a different type of motivation. You may decide, I want to make my wife happy, and that's important enough to me to do this. But it has to be your own desire to do it, not she threatens you with whatever kind of mayhem if you don't. Positive motivations
usually work better. I want to have more energy. And if I don't smoke, I'll be able to jog further or keep up with my son when we play tennis or something of that sort. Tends to do better at motivating people than my saying, look, you're going to get lung cancer if you don't quit those lame blank cigarettes. That can be as simple as saying, I want to live a long time, and cigarettes don't fit with that desire to live a long time. But usually it's some sort of positive statement that is easier to live with.
There may be a negative statement into a positive statement.
And that's a very possible thing to do. But again, that has to be an internal statement. I can help a patient by trying to frame a positive statement that they may adopt. But if I say, you know, I think you'd live longer if you stop smoking, and Joe goes home and says to himself, you know, Doc says I'm going to die of heart disease if I don't quit smoking. He's taken my positive statement and made a negative one out of it. And I think that we do have to acknowledge that, don't we all do better if somebody pats us on the back than if we're afraid they're going to tell us something bad? And I think that that's real important to tell ourselves, and it's real important if someone we care about has a habit that they want to change, that we'd like to help them change, is to congratulate them when they've, you know, bought two packs fewer this week than the week before, rather than nagging them about, you usually buy 7 packs and you're still buying 5. Why the heck are you still buying 5 packs of cigarettes? You'll get much further with saying, gosh, I can see that you're really working on this and you slowed down. So motivation, internal, positive, and probably the more concrete, the better. If you say, well, gosh, cigarettes cost a lot of money. I want to save money. To do something like put the money that you save each day in a jar, or to, at the end of the week, buy a pair of movie tickets, or to say I'm saving this money for a trip, or whatever, is a much more effective way of motivating yourself than just saying, oh gosh, yeah, cigarettes cost a lot of money, and you know, I don't really know where the money went, because at the end of the month I still don't have any extra money, even though I didn't buy cigarettes long. You know, there goes your motivation, because you don't see it. So try to make it concrete. Small steps are usually more helpful. I think those that have been involved with trying to deal with addictions, the whole idea of one day at a time or one step at a time. Mm-hmm. It's usually a lot more possible to say, I won't smoke today. That's the whole point behind the Great American Smokeout. Is, you know, hey, anybody, you can stop smoking for a day. We're not asking you to do anything more. Just don't smoke on November 20th. And yet some people can go from there and say, well, gosh, if I could do it November 20th, I can keep doing it. So talk a little bit about motivation. Preparation.
To stop smoking is, for someone who has a habit of smoking, is difficult, and for some, of course, much more difficult than others. But what I maintained, and I found it very easy to quit smoking. When I decided, I didn't care what it cost, I'm quitting.
Mm-hmm. So motivation is really important.
That mental, decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting that as many of them who are struggling, they won't make up their mind. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they would like to quit smoking, but they won't say, I am quitting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where that, as you put it, you really got to make a determined effort. That's why desire is up on the top of the list. Preparation. Habits are automatic. If you're going to get uncomfortable, if you're going to get out of the rut,
You need to know what groove you're going to jump to from the groove you're in. One of the things I encourage people who are trying to find especially who are trying to break habits, is to look at what purpose does that habit serve. Speaking of smoking, what purpose does smoking serve for people?
Satisfaction.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about what satisfaction means.
In a nursing home for 11 years as chaplain, and the old fellows who smoked the pipe always seemed to be well balanced, well, they enjoyed life, they got some satisfaction out of life. That pipe was I really felt it was meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
So if you quit smoking, and smoking has become for you a comforting thing,
mm-hmm.
or takes the edge off, there are some good things that, you know, in that sense, that you have to find a substitute.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was talking about, alternative habits there. All of our rituals and habits in life have some kind of a purpose for us. So I think we could define that security a little more when I talk to smokers. What do you think the number one thing I hear from women is? And women in general don't tend to be addicted to cigarettes. People who smoke less than a pack a day and have certain other characteristics are seldom addicted to smoking. They're habitual rather than addicted smokers. What do you think the number one thing that women tell me is the reason that they smoke? Kind of
interesting. Keep busy. Social.
Okay. Social's a good thought. Actually, it's permission to take a break. By far, the number one reason I hear from women for smoking cigarettes is I get to sit down for 5 minutes. And I don't have to do anything for anybody for 5 minutes. Now, for men, that may not be the number one. Being that I'm female and I have more male partners than I do female partners, I don't see a lot of men for counseling type issues. But I heard someone mention social. We do have rituals around smoking, the whole coffee break. If where you work is anything like where I work, the smokers sit over here and talk to each other, and the non-smokers sit over here and talk to each other. And if you want to talk to a smoker, you go to the smoking area, and there are certain rituals that take place in the smoking area. What do we need to do to deal with security? I think gentleman over here, what is your name, sir?
Oscar.
Okay. What Oscar was saying is that he was talking about the gentleman at the nursing home that had smoked a pipe and was real comfortable with that.
He lived to be 102.
Yeah. But I think we also have to make decisions as individuals which habits are worth changing. An 83-year-old nursing home resident who is very comfortable with his smoking may not choose to change that habit. A 50-year-old man who's got an elevated cholesterol and a plugged coronary artery and a young family to support may have a great deal different motivation to change that habit. And I think that's one of the things that's really important is who's motivated to change. As the person's physician, I'm not the one that decides whether that person is motivated, should change. Because I can say you'd live longer, but does everybody want to live longer? Maybe not. Especially somebody that's lived a pretty full life and is already a ripe old age. But when we're talking about preparation, if we're going to change a habit, we're going to have to replace it with another habit. And so it makes sense to think about what those rituals signify for us. what they do for us. And so I think the first part of that is to think about, why is it that we have the habit? Why do we have a cup of coffee in the morning? Why do we sit down and smoke the cigarette after dinner? And I think most people do much better if they do some brainstorming. I literally ask my patients who tell me in the office that they want to quit smoking, but they, you know, tried a couple times and didn't get very far, is to sit down and look at what are the symbolic things for them. I don't use those terms, but I have them pick, what's the hardest cigarette going to be to give up for you? You know, the one in the car, the one after meals, the one first thing in the morning. And I ask them to brainstorm. Write down 20 things you could do while you're talking on the phone. Write 20 things you could do in a social situation besides have a drink. And then I ask them to say, you know, put silly things down. Stand on your head in the corner while you're talking on the cell phone. I don't think anybody's going to do that one. But the point is that if they realize that, yes, they can be very free about this, they're not going to be committed to any of them, then I ask them to pick one of those things and try it next time they feel like doing the thing that they want to avoid. So making some alternatives here, deciding what you might like for a habit. We talked, I'm going to get this on the list here, breaking patterns. Habits are often connected. And because they are automatic, we move from one pattern to the next pattern without even really realizing it. How many people that you know that are trying to stop smoking will say, I wind up with a cigarette in my hand and I don't even know it got there. Or I let them burn up in the ashtray. And forget about them. They're part of a pattern. Yeah?
It's kind of this motion too. You know, sucking your thumb, okay. Smoking, okay. I've seen mm-hmm. people who try to quit smoking pop lifesavers. They've got to...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are, I don't happen to have the list.
I have to eat. I got to...
Okay, but there's also, I've got something else to put up here. Self-talk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, the person who says, I have to eat mm-hmm. when I don't smoke. What's that message? And is that an accurate message? Mm-hmm. What's the message? If I say, I have to eat, what's the message?
Substitution, I suppose.
But there's another message in there. Have to says what? I have no control mm-hmm. over my body. You're not exercising control if you're doing something you don't want to do. But that doesn't mean that you don't have that control. And I ask people to change their talk. I have people who say, I can't stop smoking. Sometimes all I ask them to do is say, I've had a hard time quitting smoking. Or I haven't quit smoking yet. Become open to the possibility of change. And sometimes people wake up a little to that. Another thing that, especially relating to smoking among teenagers, is there are a couple of national groups. Doctors Ought to Care is probably the number one group right now that's dealing with this. There are a couple of others. The DARE program in the schools deals with this some. The whole idea of advertising and what it tells us about ourselves and learning to read the manipulation of advertising for what it is. The whole idea that, you know, can I be popular without a drink in my hand? Do you have to be skinny to be successful? Breaking some of those advertising images. The Marlboro man who's always got the girl and is always athletically victorious. There have been some interesting counter-advertising campaigns based on ridiculing. And when kids realize that you're pointing out facts to them, you know, wait a minute,
Is the guy who smokes going to be the one that wins the athletic contest? That doesn't make any sense. Does it look cool to have orange hands and bad breath? There's a real cute poster that I wish I had in my office that has a rugged looking man in a denim shirt that's unbuttoned down to just above the waist, and he's got a chain on, and he looks, you know, really macho and cool. He has a cigarette hanging from his nostril, and it says, "I smoke for smell." That has to be very effective among the teenagers at showing them how stupid smoking looks. And maybe somewhat successful in preventing the first attempts at smoking. But once we've already got the habit, just looking at the advertising that got us the habit probably isn't going to be too helpful. So we talked a little bit about breaking patterns, like changing the chair you sit in, self-talk, allowing yourself the possibility of being successful, giving yourself positive motivation, reminding yourself why you want to change the habit. We've talked a little bit about a negative habit of smoking here. Let's talk about a positive habit. What positive habit might you want to develop?
Reading.
Okay. How would you go about starting a new habit?
Try to get time for it.
Okay. Okay.
If you're an extrovert involved in a group, you have to be a first-based.
Okay. So starting habits. And groups can also be helpful in stopping habits. Both groups that involve activities that are incompatible with a habit, such as joining a club that doesn't allow smoking, that, you know, plays cards or something, to be away from the habit you want to avoid, or simply a support group. One of the best stop smoking programs is the American Cancer Society program, primarily because they have groups for about 6 weeks where people talk about, you know, this was hard for me, and people get empathetic with them, or, you know, I tried this and it worked well for me, and someone else says, well, gosh, I could try that too. So a group to do it together. Okay, and I also heard a regular time. Other things that help you start habits you want to start. Chuck, you mentioned meditation. Anything that you found helpful there?
I think focusing in the morning when you wake up.
Okay.
And knowing what you're going to be doing during the day rather than scattered all over.
Okay.
I think that.
Focus.
Direction.
Okay. And that focus might include review your motivation.
Not meditating with a cigarette.
Yeah. Don't put a good habit with a bad habit. So, review motivation, plan your time, maybe early before you get tired or busy to start habits. I think that's good, especially with exercise and meditation both. Other things?
People? I was going to mention, do we have choir at 4:30?
Oh, okay.
Quarter to?
Okay.
She gets two.
Yeah, we aren't going to have much of an alto section if we have choir practice too early. Some things that will help us start good habits. Practice. Just plain, I think I mentioned this in one of my other talks. I don't have the literature behind it, but I've seen this quoted several times, that if you practice doing something that you want to make a habit, and you manage to do it daily for 20 days in a row, about 3 weeks, that your chances of converting that to a long-term habit are very good. That it doesn't take a long time. I think the other part of it is reward. Mm-hmm. Make sure that, and even if that reward is not the ultimate goal of the habit, that you reward yourself in some fashion for the habit. And the habit itself may be rewarding. You may find that you're more relaxed or more centered when you meditate. You may find that you've enjoyed those books that you've been reading so much that the habit itself is a self-reward. But maybe it's something that's a little more difficult. Maybe it's something like exercise that you're doing because it's good for you and it's kind of, I'm not so sure I'm totally thrilled with this. But stop and review and remind yourself of something good that's happened as a result of your habit. Because I've been exercising 3 times a week, I don't have to stop on the way up Chalet Hill. I can see a difference. And celebrate that. That's
with another cigarette.
I'm sorry?
With a cigarette.
No. Have to be very, and that's one that I think people have to be real careful about, especially if you're trying to change eating habits. In our society, one of the rewards that we use very frequently in our society is food. And if you're trying to change a food-related habit, don't reward it with food. And we could spend a whole hour on tricks of the trade of trying to lose weight. But I think that that's another habit. Change your eating habits. If you want to lose weight, change them for positive reasons. I want to get into this dress. I want to be able to exercise more easily rather than I ought to weigh X weight. Enjoy the journey, especially if the habit is something that is to get to a goal.
Go to the promised land.
Yeah.
Exodus journey.
Yeah. That someone who is trying to develop physical fitness or is trying to lose weight, to be careful about the fact that rather than putting yourself a goal way out in the future, learn to appreciate the side benefits of your new habit along the way. I have more energy because I'm eating right. I can breathe better because I'm not smoking as much. Try to celebrate the changes that you have made. Make little changes that last. I think that's especially true when we're talking about eating habits. Before I came to Holden, I had a real idea that I probably did want to move toward a vegetarian lifestyle. And I think I've had one bite of fish since I've been here at Holden, and that was not a big deal. And it's pretty easy here because they serve it to you, and there's always that alternative up there and whatnot. But I'm not going to do that when I get home. And I'm not going to feel guilty when my kids want to go to McDonald's and I'm sitting there and going, I'm not going to eat a chef's salad again. That we may need to make changes along the road. If someone says, I want to clean up my eating habits, I'm never going to eat chocolate again and I love chocolate, how well do you think they're going to keep that promise? Probably not. But to be able to say, I am going to eat only one piece of candy or a piece of cookie or something of that sort, and I'm going to limit that to once a day, once a week, whatever, a goal that we may be able to keep, or I'm going to lower the fat in my diet and I'm not going to have more than 3 ounces of meat once a day. For someone who's trying to limit their fats, maybe a lot better than to say, I'm never going to have a hamburger, I'm never going to do this. If we talk about deprivation, we're almost always doomed to fail. If we talk about what I'm going to do that's good for myself, I am going to eat more vegetables, I am going to eat more fruit, I'm going to eat more whole grain. tends to be a more successful approach to changing eating styles. I'm going to, for instance, try to serve at least one meatless meal a week to my family, and I'm going to try to make things that if I leave the meat out of my portion, it's easy to do. That may be part of my way of attacking a gradual vegetarian lifestyle. Also, I think it's important that we change our own habits. I see a lot of cases where the wife will say, well, yes, I would like to have John or Joe eat less fat. I'm sorry? Wait a minute. Whose is this? I can't make my family desire a vegetarian lifestyle. Make my life a whole lot easier if they wanted to, too. But change has to come from within. And we can't change our partners or our children or whatever. I think we're almost out of time. And
let there be peace on earth.
Let it begin with me, not let it begin by my clobbering him into being peaceful.
Right.
I think we should probably say something in this session about habits that are more than habits and are addictions. By definition, an addiction is something that the individual does not have control over, and nagging and saying, oh, I'm going to do it, are seldom successful. I know that Chuck could probably spend a whole hour telling us about 12-step programs, and I think that they're extremely valuable. I think it's important that we distinguish between habits and addiction. Cigarette smoking, one of the best and one of the worst things that's happened to cigarette smoking is these new nicotine patches. Nicotine patches are very helpful in allowing people to break the habit and the addiction separately, if they have both. But I see so many people who have only the habit of smoking and not an addiction who come in and say, would you please give me the patches, which by the way cost $3 a day and are not paid for by insurance most of the time, so that they will make me stop smoking, when they only have a habit to start with. I'm sorry, here's the tape that goes with, and the booklet that goes with the patches. Forget the prescription, go home and start working on your habits. Because all that the gum or the patches are going to do is help you not withdraw from the substance while you're also changing your habits. 12-step programs and treatment programs can help give structure to people who have lost that locus of internal control. Any more you'd like to say about how 12-step programs fit into this?
Now, there's a ritual in every 12-step program. They read through the ritual in 12 steps. And, then you have two groups, one that talks about one step of the 12, they meet one little group, and another group goes off into another room and they talk about story time. Their own case study.
Okay.
And you don't criticize, you just listen.
Accepting that people have
to
do it for themselves. Thank you very much for your input. I really thought we weren't going to have enough material. We have way too much. There is a difference in addictions, but still the idea of people making their own decisions, that interventions can be done by families or other concerned people, but once you're out of the initial detoxification, you got to stick with the program because you're motivated to do it.
Well, a basic threat of death might help too. I mean, I hate to be that dire.
Yeah.
But you know, but sometimes, let's face it, it...
That certainly is a help in getting people to initially stop smoking, but they go back to smoking 6 months after the heart attack if they haven't internalized, I want to be healthier. And that's the same guy that once he's not... once he's back in the boss's good graces and he isn't being threatened with being fired, etc., if he hasn't internalized the principles of the fact that alcohol is a substance over which he does not have control, if he goes back to thinking, oh, I'm okay now, I can drink socially,
There are only about two programs who claim to have had any success with social drinking. I don't recall the names of them, but, you know, by and large, the majority of programs for people who have had alcohol problems have said, as Alcoholics Anonymous says, don't return because it will get you again.